I'm on a mission to help high flyers just like yourself, who until now have let the fear of public speaking hold them back from making a bigger impact. Join me as I find out the secret sauce from the world's leading speakers to make your speeches more interesting, enjoyable to give, and impactful for your audience. That's the mission, and this podcast will get you there. My name's Victor Ahipeni, and this is the Public Speaking Secrets Podcast. Speaker Nation, welcome to another episode of Public Speaking Secrets Podcast. I'm your host, Victor Ahipeni, trying to make public speaking more enjoyable to give and more enjoyable to receive on the other end. And today I've got another expert in a more different niche to many of our other speakers, but more than accomplished speaker himself and author. It's Dr. Bo Adams, and he is the head of a church in South Atlanta in the United States of America. And we're going to delve into how he has been able to share his message and the strategies and systems that he sets up. And then we're also just going to find out a bit more about him. So welcome to the show, Bo.
Oh, thanks, Victor, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Cool. So I saw when I was researching you and got your bio and things like that, you did your first degree, was it in a Bachelor of Communications? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's kind of a story that leads up to that, I guess. When I was in the 11th grade in high school, I remember my teacher, English teacher, saying, we're all going to have to give a oral presentation. And so I was, you know, terrified of doing that. But anyway, I followed the instructions. You know, they said, get a note card, write everything you need on the note cards and flip the note cards as you stand up. And I got up in front of the class that day, and I read off the first note card, but I was so terrified standing in front of other people speaking that I literally could not flip to the next card. I completely froze. And in that fear and freezing like that, a friend of mine in the back of the class started laughing. Before you know it, the whole class was laughing at me, and I just went and sat down, and I just remember I got a bad grade. I walked out of class that day, and I made a promise to myself. I remember right where I was when I said it. I said, I promise I will never ever speak in front of people again in my life. But what's amazing about that for me, it's my faith. It was really interesting, because at that moment it was almost like I heard this voice that said, well, perfect, then now you have to speak for me. I'll have to be the one speaking through you from now on. And so after that, I always was at this place of, I know I can't do it myself. I need somebody greater to be able to do it through me if I'm ever going to be effective, if I'm ever going to make a difference. And that just then led me on where I found myself in places where I started speaking, and went to Georgia State University and said, teach me more. I've got to learn more. I've got to learn these skills to be able to communicate effectively. And so that's how that degree all came about. I decided, what else do I need to do? Hey, I just need to learn how to communicate.
It's funny almost the baptism of fire. It's like, yeah, I hate speaking, so I'm probably going to do a Bachelor of Communication. But I mean, It's the funny thing, and I'd be interested to get your thoughts on it. Like going to do that, I mean, that kind of 13, 14, 15-year-old situation is often people's first proper talk in your English class. And often we're getting taught how to speak by someone who's not a great speaker themselves. And it's not even getting to speak. It's getting to write down an essay onto cue cards, or modern day it's probably PowerPoint in classes now, and then it's to recite that hopefully give eye contact every once in a while. And I think it's what starts this self-limiting belief that I can't be a speaker, I'm not a good speaker, because I'm not great at memorizing a 5-minute speech and things like that. How did you find it, I guess? Like, is that something that you'd agree or disagree with? And then when you went and started that degree, did things change? Like, did you actually learn systems to be able to speak from?
Absolutely. And one of my favorite professors, one of the things that he initially told everybody, he said, if you're afraid, if you're nervous, he goes, then that's exactly where you need to be. He said, if somebody gets up and they're not initially afraid or nervous about speaking in front of people, they bring no life to what they're saying. Instead, he says, channel that nervousness, channel that energy into being animated, into expressions and so forth. And so he began to teach us that. And one of the cardinal rules for speaking, he would say, don't memorize. When you try to memorize something, you get to that one or two words that you can't remember, and it causes you to pause, and then that pause causes you to, it just grows, it gets worse and worse. And so to be able to speak freely becomes a much more effective way that I found to minister than to try to memorize things.
Yeah. And I guess that's the thing that I think of too, is it's kind of using two, when you try and do that, you're using both sides of your brain. One's trying to remember what to say, and then the other one's got to try and perform that rather than delivering more centrally. So you went in there, and I guess how did you feel at the end of the degree? Did you feel you're a confident orator at that stage? And was that
It's a lifelong process. I can't remember who made this point to me a long time ago. He said, "For anything that you do, you can increase a lot up to that 90%. In other words, you work on this and you get a lot better. He goes, once you get over that 90%, that next 10%." It's just minuscule. You'll get a little bit better, but you keep working at a little bit better over time. And honestly, for me, you know, I speak to a lot of people every weekend, and I will have been in ministry now at the church for 30 years this June. And you would think after all this period of time that I would, before I get up, that I would just be, no worries, I'm fine, you know. But I still to this day have this anxiety, anxiousness when I stand up before I speak. But I have to, and over the years, I've learned how to channel that and just use those things to get a little bit better in certain areas, to be able to connect with people, to be able to communicate effectively.
And what do you think that anxiety is? Do you think it's the pressure to make sure that you convey an important message well, or I'd love to know your insights into that, because
great question. That's a great question. And the reason is because I have found that I cannot as effectively speak about things that I don't care about, if that makes sense. In other words, if I'm just given a random bit of a bunch of information, I can't stand there. I get confused. I get lost. But if there is something that is important, a message that I believe in my heart, then I can communicate in the way that I need to communicate it. And so I think it is feeling that overwhelming. This is important. This is what people need to hear. This is where we're at. And you feel that weight, and that weight builds for me all throughout the week leading up to that message. I'll write on Tuesdays and distribute outlines and so forth to other pastors who will be taking that message and preaching wherever it is I have them going to as well. And we talk about it on Wednesdays, but then my wife will tell you on Saturday, I'm a weird person. I'm zoned out. I've done this for years. There's a place in the woods, a park that I go and I just walk. And as I walk, that message is going over and over in my head. And that is also the place where I get most of my illustrations, the illustrations that, take that reality or that truth that I'm trying to convey and bring it home, that it makes the heart connection that people need with when you're speak on a truth. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And with your presentation, so Tuesday, I mean this is what I think's Yeah, and an awesome highlight to a lot of people that, again, have got those beliefs around why they can't be speakers and things like that. You've gone from, you know, stuttering Stanley at school, yeah, to being able to start speaking, to, you know, every single week having to give a keynote presentation of sorts, right, to a congregation and have it be impactful. Have you found a framework or a repeatable kind of, you know, fill in the gaps per se to, yeah, I guess your secret to success when it comes to delivering yours? Do you find something that helps speed up that process or make it that you know that it's going to be more likely to be an impactful message?
They're also very different, but there are certain elements that I usually put into every message. One of the things that I use a lot of is humor, because humor disarms a bunch of people. If you can, and especially self-deprecating humor, if you can make the joke about yourself first and have people laughing with you about something, they become very disarmed and they're opened to everything else that you're, in other words, they're saying, well, he doesn't think more of himself than he should. He's not a this, you know? And so they say, okay, tell me what you're talking about. And they'll listen better. And so I certainly try to use humor in a lot of my speaking. But then at the same time, there are so many common things that happen to me in a day that even happen to you in a day or anybody else who's sitting there listening. And if you take one of those common events, those common stories, common things that happened to you this last week, and you don't do it so you're always talking about yourself, but if you're able to take something and say, hey, this happened to me, and everybody else can say, ah, it happened to me too, and then suddenly that would happen, you connect that as an illustration to this truth that I'm trying to teach, it's then that you almost see people nod and go, oh, okay, now I get it, and because they can suddenly relate to it.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. It's like Jerry Seinfeld. He built the whole Seinfeld TV. All his stand up is, yeah, I mean, I know comedians do it about things that happen, but Jerry Seinfeld is so good at, you know, you look at all his shows, you look at all his stand up, they're not these hilarious stories. It's like, it's funny because it's ridiculously true, and everyone, it makes you relatable. And yeah, I mean, the other interesting point that you had in here, I had it's too early in the morning, but my brain's slipping me. One of my past guests, he wrote, "Do You Talk Funny?" And in the book, it talks about how the funniest TED Talks, which are on, you know, like The Future of Education by Sir Ken Robinson, and the most like Brené Brown on vulnerability and things, they have more laughs per minute than movies like The Hangover and other, you know, other really, really funny movies. And they're not like roll on the floor laughing kind of humor, but it's amazing that some of the most serious topics that have been viewed and had the biggest impact had so much humor interwoven into them to, like you say, disarm. It's the first time I've heard anyone say disarm people, but it's absolutely true. And I think it's a really, 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 really good point. And as you say, speaking is a lifelong task. And I think for me, I'm generally naturally funny, but putting that into talks and being able to teach people to intertwine laughter and humor is one of the best skills that make it a big difference with your when it comes to your speaking. So it's really, really interesting. So let me delve into, we were saying off air, you've written some books and you're launching some books. Tell me a bit about that.
The first book I wrote several years ago is called Seven Stupid Things People Do to Mess Up Their Lives. And so I've had a lot of people go, only seven? Well, that's all I had time in the book for. It's not exhaustive, but we put that out several years ago, and it really has turned out to be a great book, especially for I have a 24-year-old and a 23-year-old, but back there were those years my kids are, you know, 17, 18, 19, or even, and they're going through certain things, and I'm wanting to be able to say to them, don't do the stupid things your dad did, you know, and let me help you here. And let's talk about these things. And so it's great for anybody going through maybe that type of stuff, or maybe, you know, you have a 30-year-old who's doing the same thing that we did back when, and you're saying, I still need this book, but yeah. And so that was the first one that came out, which is, we really enjoyed and getting it out there, and people really enjoyed that title, Seven Stupid Things. But the most recent one we just released this last December is a book called Restoration. And we titled it Restoration, Heal Your Soul, Heal Your Life. And it's all about restoration in different areas of our lives. Maybe it's restoration in relationships and how to restore a relationship that was once broken, or restoration physically and getting the health that you need, all these type different areas of our life and how to go about that. And so that one just we just put that out, and that's been a really big success. We've seen a lot of neat things happen with that one already. One other I had that I was going to bring to your attention as well. It's called Stones of Gratitude. And it's based on the idea that we can have a rich life when we just begin to realize, have gratitude for all the different things in our life, and take time to look at these things and appreciate things that happened to us, maybe in our past, even though one time we thought that was a terrible thing. But to actually take time to go, you know what, I'm going to be thankful even for the tough times that I had in my life, because it taught me this and it brought me to this place. And so that was called Stones of Gratitude there.
I think that's it's an interesting point too, because I try and talk with people about that when they're going to do either presentations for the first time or talking to a bigger audience than they ever have. And it's often a good assistance in coping with those anxiety and the fear and things like that, with like, hey, you've got an awesome message. You're going to go out there and impact some people. You've got the chance. Yeah, it's really hard to be fearful and grateful at the same time. If you're going, oh, this is awesome, I'm going to go out and speak in front of all these people and have an awesome experience, and I'm going to change some lives, or impact some families, or whatever it is, it's really hard on the flip side to be like, oh no, I'm going to go and stuff this all up, or this is too many people and things like that. So I highly recommend that to a lot of people. And I think if people are looking to dive into more of that, then they should get on those. We'll link them all at publicspeakingblueprint.com. If people want to search them elsewhere, where should they go?
If you go on Amazon, you can purchase the books there. If you Google or put on Amazon, Bo Adams, B-E-A-U, Adams, A-D-A-M-S. I know it's spelled a little weird, a little different than most people would think, but it's Bo Adams, B-E-A-U, A-D-A-M-S. And you can put that on Amazon. Those books will pop up, or even my website is boadams.com. And you just hit it there, okay?
Awesome. So we'll link all of those if you forget at publicspeakingblueprint.com. You can find all the episodes. I wanted to touch on one last thing, and it was when you were talking about the kind of self-deprecating humor and making it a kind of relatable thing about that. And I found it really interesting, because there's kind of a bit of a movement or a thought that I've been having, and it's in the regards to we all hate being told what to do, yet we call it storytelling versus is it the story showing or the story selling, that some of the words floating around now, that it's sell it, sell, not sell it as in selling the physical thing, but selling the idea of, hey, this is, it's effective because it's me, or it's I'm showing you that I'm more relatable, that it's part of me rather than the telling. How do you go about when you obviously would use a lot of stories in your deliveries and things like that? How do you go about setting them up and taking them on a journey, so it's not necessarily sorry to use the word, but preaching that?
Sure.
Because I think a lot of things has changed in regards to getting a message across, and it's not like don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, yeah. because yeah. we all know what people are going to do. It's like, don't eat that donut that we got in front of you. Well,
sure.
All right, sure. probably going to eat it versus, you know, creating a movement for people.
Yeah. Well, you know, that book I was talking about, Seven Stupid Things We Do to Mess Up Our Lives, in the book and in the messages that led to the book, I would say, all right, here's something stupid. And people realizing that I've done these stupid things as well. And then I'll tell a story, you know, and in order for me to tell a story, I see it in my head, what happened, and I'm talking through what happened as I see it in my head. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And so I have that picture, and so I just begin to tell them. One thing that I talked about recently was I've had a lot of speeding tickets in my life.
Yeah.
My wife has not. And so she's always kind of held that over my head, right? Well, she called me one day and said, you're not going to believe this. I just got pulled over and had a speeding ticket. And so I talked everybody through about my inward rejoicing over she finally got one. And she had to go, she had to actually go stand before the judge. Oh, she was scared to death. And and so I'm telling everybody the story of how, you know, they marched her in with all the other criminals and she had to stand there and listen to the judge. And the judge actually said, well, it's your first offense. And I'm going to let you go on this. And just the commentary that I would have in this of, you know, how dare he let her go. When I was like, but see, what I'm talking about is how I've failed so many times and been the one to get speeding tickets, you know, and it relating that to all the different other stupid things that we do in our lives. And so it just kind of, it gives you a way in where people go, you know what, I'm one of those who I've had a lot of tickets as well, or maybe I'm one of those who I'm like your wife who, you know, never does anything. But it's a way in where people can relate. So often you think about this, that my congregation, I'll have people bringing guests all the time who have never been to church before, and the last thing I want to do is come and hear a preacher preach to them, right? Mm. And so you can almost imagine how many of them are sitting there with their arms crossed saying, okay, let's see what you can teach me. Come on, you know, this is kind of, I dare you to say something. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, it breaks down those defense mechanisms.
I'm interested to ask, and this is more of a personal interest question than anything. I listened to the startup series by Gimlet Media, and it was about, they did a 7 or 8 part series on church planting and setting up and like the difficulties in growing the modern day church. You know, getting new people in, you know, obviously things have changed from, you know, we're in a 7-day work week now and all these different difficulties. And it seemed like the ones that were successful were not necessarily the ones up on stage yelling and singing and chanting and everything else, but the ones that convey a pretty good message is the way I took it. But what are some of the, I guess, marketing strategies or growth strategies that you have to use in the modern day? Is it speaking? Is it getting into other areas and sharing your word? Is it, you know, different things like what have you found effective for growth? Because I'm sure it's applicable to all parts of business and things like that.
Sure. That's a really long conversation because there are so many different variables and we've had to address so many throughout the years. Certainly it's the way the message is communicated on my part versus what people might have been used to growing up. It's even music and music style, and it's in visual things as well. That's part of it. It's in how we get the message out there and communicate by and large outside the walls of the church. It's through the church being a group of people that's not stuck inside, but getting outside and serving the people around in their community, impacting the community and making a difference, which gives the church then a voice to others. It's technology now. We have a large online campus, which every Sunday we have people all over the United States and in different parts of the world who tune in, and they say, this is my church, and this is my church home, and they'll gather with groups of people and watch live online. And so there's so many different variables that come into this, but you have to a lot of people are kind of saying this new generation, the millennial generation, they can't be reached, they can't, they're checked. And that might be true for some, but we're starting to see how we can relate to even the millennial generation. They're coming along and they're bringing. So you think about for me, this younger generation, that they've grown up knowing what an iPhone is and grown up having all this technology available and all these, and where I'm still trying to get used to it myself, but they come along and we put them into leadership roles in place, and they begin to communicate and they begin to step up and allow the church to be that, to grow into that generation where we're communicating with that generation like never before. It's neat for me to see. I don't know all the ins and outs and how exactly they do everything, but it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And to watch it happen. And so I'm all excited about the millennial generation and what they're bringing to the church. So there, like I said, there really are so many different variables. Yeah. And we could talk about it for hours.
But yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. There's a lot that goes into that.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I mean, it's awesome seeing that insight, because like I say, it's just like any other business that's looking to grow and flourish and have as big an impact as possible. There's all these little things that go behind the scenes that seem to add up to one cumulative effect of not making the right impact. So, well, I'd just like to thank you so much for jumping on today and sharing some awesome insights. I'm sure the Speaker Nation will join. I'd just like to welcome you to our Speaker Nation family.
Awesome.
Again, if people want to track you down, it's Bo Adams, BEAU Adams.com.
Mm-hmm. Cool. That's right.
And we'll link all of that at publicspeakingblueprint.com. And I look forward to keeping in touch and catching up and following your journey.
Great. Thank you so much, Victor. I really enjoyed this. Great talk today.
If you want to fast track your confidence and impact with public speaking, then be sure to jump over to publicspeakingblueprint.com, where there's an array of free resources to help you no matter where you are on your journey to becoming a more powerful speaker. And while you're at it, jump over to Facebook and join our free community called Speaker Nation, where there's a ton of other like-minded individuals just like yourself looking to level up. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss next week's episode.